Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are the Architects of Entropy, and this is the Wenyas Hollow World Building Special Part 2. If you heard our last episode, you have heard quite a bit of build-up of this hereto-unforeseen area of Iamora that we may one day discover. So we're going to jump right back in again with the placement of events in our already established timeline of history. So take it away. Now what I want to do is go into our timeline. And I have shared these documents with you guys, so you should have them in Google Docs. I probably should have mentioned to, you know, maybe pull those up before we started, but you know, here's me, I'm an idiot. I know I gave them to Scott recently. Do you guys have access to those?
Yeah, I got it.
I remember seeing them. I'm looking for where they are.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I got it.
So 140 is when Wenyas Hollow, you know, more or less arrives.
Right.
And then, honestly, that's the only bit of history that I have to up till like the 700. So from the year 200 to 300, we have the arrival of our first dragon down south. The progenitor starts, founds Glass Bale, and kind of makes, you know, kind of gives the Isog more direction. Isog start to tunnel around. The Var arrive out west, and then Malshar is founded in those years. Can you think of does anybody have anything they want to kind of plant in that time? We'll probably flow through a lot of this fairly quickly, but I
want. Well, here's a question for you, MJ. I mean, it's your creation. And you say evil's not allowed here, but maybe an ancient evil is buried here and guarded from the rest of the world? Yeah, that could be an item or a being or something, or not. I'm just throwing it out there. Is that something that, nope, they're just not allowed in, or it could be possible?
Mm. Yeah, maybe. Maybe there's something far, far below the surface that they're trying to keep away. I don't know.
Okay.
The thought. Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
I will leave that kind of loop.
Okay.
So I'm kind of obsessed with the idea I mean, maybe not obsessed. I mean, that's what I think about when I go to sleep or anything. But the idea of like there are humans, like I don't know what kind of human settlements are around. It seems like they're kind of far away. But at some point in the timeline, when humanity gets closer to this thing, this idea that there would be people who would be like, hey, you know, being a serf kind of sucks, and maybe I'm going to go live in the woods. Those people seem to have a good time, and that would be where, like, I know the bog standard locals are the Puka. And then you've got some witches, and so they'll recruit some people or something like that. But is there like, and then you've got the people wandering around who came with ill will, but maybe there's just the people who are like, this whole you know, human society isn't working for me. I want to go live in the trees. And those people show up. So is there a part where like, is there people nearby this thing that like, oh yeah, we used to have these towns nearby and they're all gone because everyone decided that toiling for their whole life was terrible and they should go live in the woods. And but I don't know if that even works because I'm looking around where the humans are and I'm not sure. So
right, well, and once again, this map doesn't account for any number of random settlements of anything. The idea is that as far as humans go, humans can be anywhere, and they don't necessarily, like, we've defined a bunch of human cultures, but there are non-defined humans that are out there that, you know, I feel like it's kind of if people feel I'm off base, let me know, but I have a feeling that, like, humans are that race that kind of, well, you know, they show up and mess everything up usually in fiction. But they are, you
know, the dwarves in this.
The dwarves try.
Well, anyway, my thought is, and anybody can tell me what it is that there would be like a small, not a large like settlement, but there would be this small thing of these people who are helping, you know, the forest, and they live in the forest and they kind of symbiotically exist there. And they would be like the descendants of people who left their miserable human lives, you know, like the settlers in the U.S. who decided, like in the early colonies, who said, huh, you know, the First Nation people really have it going on. They seem to have a better life than me toiling away for some other guy on this farm. This is Scott's leftistness coming to the fore. But anyway, like, I have this idea that there'd be people there, and then, you know, maybe not. It didn't work out for all of them, but there would be this core of people, and this probably should have been in the last section. But then around the thing, there's these abandoned villages, which is like, well, this is good land, and there's no, you know, ravening orc tribes here to destroy these villages. Why is there nobody here? And there's just these like ancient ruins, or for hundreds of years ago, ruins of, like, most of it's all gone, but you can still see like the mounds of where houses were. And then there's like the one stone thing that's there, and it's outside of this, within this like circumference of the thing. And so that could be like a thing where, like, there's folk tales both ways of, oh, that forest is evil because it wipes out anybody who tries to live near it, but it doesn't. It's just like, no, it's better here. And they all emigrate and like abandon the town because they don't want to like toil, and they I'm just gonna say toil 60 times, but you know what I mean, like, I was thinking timeline wise there would be a point where it's like, you know, so and so lord of the Claudians or whatever just goes, hey, let's stop trying to colonize here because all the people go away somewhere. And let's just not worry about it, and let's go this way. But I don't know if that fits with anything, and you guys will have to tell me if that works.
It certainly can. I would say that there's a couple things that kind of come to mind. One is that, you know, there were, you know, various any human settlements. There are a number of human settlements in that area over the span of, you know, let's say, you know, 10, 20 years, all become abandoned because people wander off into Wenya's Hollow and never come back for whatever reason. Mm. And that could happen fairly early on, you know, say, like, you know, once it's been there for a while and people start to hear about it, we could park that maybe somewhere between, like, you're somewhere around between like year 150. Is that work?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd also like to throw something out. I'm not looking at the map, but I'm just thinking up north is where the Claudians came from, right?
Yeah.
So I want to throw in, and maybe this is a more recent event, that some members of the Claudians that got disenchanted with their civilization ran off to live in the forest themselves. And this is probably a more recent event after Breadbasket or something like that.
That certainly could very well happen. Yeah, that's yep. Humans from settlements nearby abandoned them to go off into the hollow, never seen again. That could mean lots of things. I'm sure that could mean that some of them, you know, so there are some, I think any people that are still there are either forgotten or might have just eventually become some other kind of fae.
Yeah,
you know, because I do know that MJ, you did say pretty early on that there really aren't humans who live there in any, like.
Yeah, so I would think that they would be people who, there would be a very small group of people who could trace their lineage back to, oh, we're the remains of this, and then maybe humans went there and then were sent off, you know, eventually, like, oh, okay, well, you guys go somewhere else. So somewhere there's like humans that are affected by this, that maybe set up their own town or their own, you know, weird socialist commune or something. I don't know, but they're doing something else, or like those people there. But like maybe some of the witches were originally these people. Or,
that's, yeah, what I was thinking. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That, yeah, could, you know, like, could have been called from that.
Yeah.
Some of them might have become brownies eventually, or
yeah,
right,
or any number of other things. Some of them might have even turned into animals.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's probably this thing that at that time there was this conduit of the forest would kind of absorb all these immigrants and be like, okay, what do we do with these refugees? These basically people was like, okay, well, they'll stay here for a little bit and we'll see what their role is. And so they were like, okay, well, the evil people will wander around aimlessly because they can't, they've done the bargain and they have nothing, so they wander around, okay, that's fine, and they'll just get picked off by predators or whatever, and they'll be part of the ecosystem, it's fine. And then some of these people will join the witches, and some of these people will turn into brownies, and some of these people we will have to calmly relocate to someplace else.
Exactly.
Because they're not bad, but they're not for, yeah. They don't belong in the forest. And like, okay, well, this person will become a talking heron and we'll have them harass people who go near the ponds, you know, and then that's that guy. And then these other people need to go somewhere. So there was this period, you know, probably before the gloaming, where they're like, okay, there's people coming in here and we need to do something with them. And we're not into just butchering them at the border. And we don't like, you know, we have all these things that guide them around, but there's these people that are kind of fleeing something or seeking something. And we need to either bring them into our whole vibe here or send them on their way. And so somewhere out there, there's this group of humans that are descended from this immigration that they said, okay, you don't work here, you know, for good or for ill, you don't work here. So we're going to send you down the stream out of our thing to this place. And then those people were eaten by a dragon. I don't know, but like, I just like this idea of like, oh, well, there was this great thing where we got these people to help us. And now all of a sudden, like all humans, it's like, well, now all of a sudden there's like 400 of them. We needed 12 guys. Go somewhere else.
I like the idea too, that the people that got sent out, we're still forever changed by the woods and maybe have extended lives or something.
Sure. Yeah. There's something weird about them. Like they're different.
Yeah.
You know, there's something, cause they weren't bad people, like that the forest felt was a threat. They were just like, oh, you don't belong for whatever, not because you're bad or not because you're particularly good or whatever. You just, the forest isn't for you.
I will put in, those sent out are changed, in quotes.
Yes.
Sounds good to me.
Alrighty. I will, in the year 180, the Wood Elves arrive, and they, the Wood Elves and the High Elves, it's been determined are, their kind of mission is, police the realms, essentially, or they piece the they police the planes to keep incursions of other planes of existence from becoming a problem. So I would like to think that, and I think the thing that I've established that really got their attention is the Nexus, which is the Isog, that whole area they come from, because there is a big roiling mass of magical fey energy that's just sitting there. And Wenya's Hollow is peaceful, pretty peaceful and non-threatening. But I think that at some point early on, the Wood Elves would have tried to make contact with the Wenya.
That makes sense.
And how do you think the Wenya would react to beings like those elves?
I suppose it would depend on, it seems like the elves have a general positive, good-natured purpose, yeah?
Yeah, I think the Wood Elves especially, the Wood Elves are a lot more, they're a lot more terrestrial, so they're a lot more tied to the land. Mm-hmm. High Elves are very tied to magic. Okay. So of the groups of elves who could potentially be problematic to the Wenya, I would say the High Elves. Okay. I would say that the Wood Elves, establish like a peaceful relationship with the Wood Elves, make themselves known. And basically the understanding is that if something bad comes out of there, they will deal with it.
Right.
But they're not expecting a lot of bad things come out of there, given how.
Right. And I think Wenya's Hollow would be like, just kind of stay out of our business until
we
could get in our.
Because the sacred wood of the elves is not at all like Wenya's Hollow. It's more of just this is a place with a lot of, inherent nature magic.
Yeah.
I'm seeing you putting in notes about the Cimmerian, and I like it.
I'm going to change. I've been thinking about this for a while.
For a while? Okay. No. Yeah, no, go ahead. Yeah, and put notes in there, please. If anything, when everything changes, just, usually they'll let me know if there's an edit. But yeah, I'm going to say that. And right now I'm putting the stuff I'm adding right now in a separate document, and I'll add it. So I'm going to say around... round 185, establish relation. Okay, so, alrighty, so, is there anything anybody wants to add in that period of time, like the first couple hundred years after they arrive? I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing this out that the timeline stuff is, I think it's going to differ for different places.
Yeah.
I feel that a lot of outside history doesn't really affect these people.
Yeah, right. I know.
Totally.
But yeah, if there's stuff you want to throw in. Okay, so.
Well, in 150, year 150, they start a war, a genocidal war against
yeah,
Red Caps. And it's horrible and it's really, really dark. But yeah, let's not get into it.
All right. Alrighty. So, yeah, sorry.
I think at some point in the future, probably the reason the Blooming was created is that an evil group infiltrates Winnius Hollow and causes a lot of chaos, but I don't know who that group is.
Okay. Exactly. Well, let's go. I'm gonna flash through history at major events we've already determined here, just to see, you know, just to remind people of stuff that we know about. All right. So, from 300 to 400 is when the second dragon arrives, which is named Moyolkayisi. In the archipelago to the southeast, the Drow becomes masters of chaos magic. Demons erupt from the volcano in the archipelago, and Asimar appear at the southeast. The progenitor moves to Baal Shanai. The Esogs become masters of the culinary arts. And this is where the Mycologs appear, between 300 and 400. The humans of Melshar become masters of trades, and the Iron Claw clan moves out from Varhold. They don't get super far. And within that time period, yeah, that's a lot of the, you know, basically there's a lot of just development up till the wars start happening. But that's, you know, the second age of this world thing. Anything there, grab anyone is something that I can't think of anything.
I can't either.
Okay. I would say maybe
grabbing kind of what MJ was saying. I like the idea that maybe you were saying the Pukas were not innately magical, but they could become magicians or wizards of powers. I like the idea that one became a great wizard or sorcerer or whatever, and became corrupted by the magic even while living in there, and that was kind of what led to having them be put down, and the witches came around at that point. As far as just a general history thing, the witches came in and helped put him down, and then have lived there ever since.
What do you think of that, MJ? Is that?
I think that works.
Okay.
I just don't know what time frame to put it in. You said before the gloaming or whatever. I mean,
well, the gloaming doesn't happen till like the more like modern age after the year 700. And that's the year 700 is when we get down into decades. There's 700 years basically of mostly just development. These are when a lot of races became known and started exploring. Some of them, you know, some of them were here. Some of them came from other places, you know.
I have a thought is that if this is an event that happens and then that starts the, oh, okay, well maybe we need to come up with a new, like there's this type of magic can infiltrate us. We need to come up with a way. And that's the thing that solidifies the witches as a faction or a group within the forest. Like, oh, okay, you guys are valid and you can stay and be part of this. And then later, that's the seed that plants the, oh, okay, so now we have probably not formal organizations, this is the way it's set up, but now we're kind of on guard for things, like we thought nothing could infiltrate us because we have the swamp, but there's, you know, deceptive magics that can sneak in. And they've, you know, periodically find something, somebody who has become, you know, corrupted or tainted or just changed their hey, everything's peaceful and I love it and maybe I could use this as a font of power, and so they have to keep an eye for that kind of thing. And then something happens later where it becomes a huge problem, like as MJ was saying, like some more powerful being, like there's you know, people who become corrupted by power every once in a while and it's an individual thing, and then later a entity says, oh, I can use these people as agents, so then it becomes a a movement, as opposed to just, hey, every once in a while someone goes crazy and tries to do something bad in the forest and the witches and the fox and the flying rabbits have to take him out, versus like, hey, now there's an intelligence behind this, and it's a directed attack, and it's using these same things that happened because it's a natural phenomenon that someone goes crazy and wants to do something, and then and that's the evil that is affecting them, and they have to, you know, ramp up their defenses into the gloaming.
Yeah.
And then that ties all that stuff together. Still don't know who that evil is, but you know.
Okay. Well, and you might not.
Entropy.
Yeah, could be.
It's very possible that that someone might say, let's just don't worry about that. But or not, or if we come up with a cool other idea. I'm not gonna squash anything, but at the same time, when things rub up against major plot lines going on now, and I decide, hey, it'd be cool if it does that. Or I might just do that just because it might be some other thing I want to do that I don't want players to know about. I think is that good for everyone? I mean,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that works for me.
It's hard. It's a challenge. I'm not gonna say. Okay, so this. So would we say that? I imagine the Kaliak have been around for a long time. But do we want to say this original event where this, you know, evil Puka being corrupted is the thing that kind of makes them formally become a thing?
Yeah, I think so. I think they have existed, you're right, in this, you know, infant form for a while.
Where do we want to put that history? I want to do it before the modern, obviously before that modern era, but do we want to do that closer to the beginning for them or somewhere in the middle?
I think somewhere in the middle.
Okay. Do you want to say like somewhere between like 300 and 400?
Yeah, maybe right after the Michalogs.
Okay. That'll put them like around like between 350.
Sure.
Good. And I like the idea that the Puka sorcerer actually created the kerfuffle. there were evil creatures that had poison, like deadly poison at the time, but they've been reabsorbed and they've been changed back into something more useful.
The centuries, they've been just become annoying to fit with the theme.
Alrighty. See, this I really love that we're starting with the craziest first, because that really establishes a baseline of just how batshit. Alrighty, so from the year 400 to 500, the first thing we have here is the Scorched Lands are created when some dragons try to get busy with each other.
Yeah, I actually have to edit that, because they did get busy with each other.
Well,
during the fertilization of the eggs.
Right. Yeah, that's.
So I do have to edit that.
That's okay. This is from the original
book.
So stuff. I think some of that stuff has been better.
Well, I think we need to probably do a special episode on just dragon population. I think that'll be big. That'll really bring in the listeners. So
there's a race of.
That's going to have to be an animated special.
Yep. Okay. You go ahead and be the boss of that project. That's all you. Again, finding animators, super easy.
I just got a call from Netflix. They said a definitive no. They're not interested. So
you pretty much all stops there. You go to Netflix and Prime, maybe. All right. So some merfolk appear. We have the merfolk that someday maybe we'll meet. Who knows? We're getting far away from them now. But the cauldron becomes a center of learning. This is where the Michalogs live. The Esogs start to become militarized. And Tidal, the High Elf emissary, shows up about 575. And the High Elves come to Ayamora. At the behest of the behest of Fendal, the sister of Tidal, who is the emissary of the Wood Elves. I would like to say that sometime around then, the High Elves will seek the Kaliak to form some kind of pact and will be rejected.
Yeah.
And then they leave. Little is known about this meeting other than the fact that it did not go well. and the high elves left and do not concern themselves with Wenyeshala officially.
Yeah.
I'll call that.
I was thinking something along those lines myself, yeah, that they got rejected by the Hollow. So that's
yeah, that yeah, I like that, because the high, you know, high elves are, you know, we've met one high elf and he was the he seemed to be a really pleasant fellow, the Archmage or whatever. High elves. I loved the way Kevin did him. Kevin
was all right. He was just a little flaky.
Kevin yeah, followed the direction that I gave him so well, as far as like what that guy, his general attitude towards everyone, you know, just like detached is, it doesn't even cut it. Approach the count, just jotting down notes. Are rejected officially. Relationship again. Okay, alrighty. And now we are, does anybody else want to plant anything in that period of time?
I don't have anything. I feel okay. Like time moves pretty slow in the forest here, you know. Okay. One major event every couple centuries seems about how it goes.
Yeah.
All right. Things start to get really weird from 500 to 600. And in year 500, the orcs basically become, are evolved, essentially, their final form, as they had been evolved from the wild boars that had dwelled in the blasted land, and became, which I love. Oh, here's a little thing, 510, and granted, that's a year I plunked on here, you know, far as just placing things here. Lorianne arrives on Iamora, creates a race of changeling.
Wait, are changelings a thing? Hang on.
No, no, Scott, don't worry about it. Good. Don't worry about it.
All right, cool.
No. Oh, no, wait. All the characters as they exist now know.
Yeah. No.
It only took like 20 some odd episodes for all the characters to know what MJ's race is. And MJ, as a player who likes to be mysterious, I say you should be very proud of that.
Oh, thanks.
Because that's most of a year of a podcast. Of a bi-weekly. In the year 550, a meteor slams into the Nexus and the serpent folk hop out of it. So for the rest, a lot of this period from 550 on is very serpent folk centric. They form their own city, and the Isog build an army. In the year 560, the Duergar are discovered. I don't know how that happened, who did it or what, or how long. I know I did it. I'm just saying, I can't tell you anything else about it other than that's where they were discovered. In the year 575, General Gaius Tilius Cilia from the First Great Claudian Empire, an expansive empire that controls the north, founds a city, Pugnus Morum, in the central north plains of Iamora. So this is where the Claudians appear. So I just want to look down and see when the their business in Breadbasket. Okay, so the annexing of Breadbasket, just for the sake of history, doesn't happen till between 750 and 760. So that's the period of conflict, as we call it, which is around that time is when that happens. So, this is where the Claudians appear in our history. So from then on, they are a force that can interact with things on some level. Pugnus Morum is probably, looking at my map here, I'm gonna show the grid, is a few weeks travel to Wenyeshala, but they did come from the north. So if we do wanna plunk down some kind of event where they, where they met or tried to go there, I would probably say anytime, you know, after, you know, the late 500s, the very late 500s, that could happen. From here on, we start getting into, then we go to one more century and then we start getting into decades.
Yeah.
Does anybody, I know Rick, you were saying, dude, I think Rick, you said something about that. I don't know if you wanted to,
Yeah, I was just saying that somewhere along the lines, some Claudians probably deserted and ended up in the forest.
Okay. And what happened to those fools, do you think?
I suspect a lot of them are wandering around. But I think a few of them are probably like, you know,
brownies.
Turned or became changed and wandered off to wherever the other changed people went. But I gotta imagine there's a couple Claudians hanging out in the woods. There's a Claudian witch and there's a Claudian Pooka. Okay. Looking good. This is not what I signed on for. I
let's plunk that at like, let's say like $5.95. Good.
I think that's probably mostly important in that now the forest knows about the Claudian Empire. Like that's that's the probably a key way the forest learns about the forest spirits learn about the world is, hey, this person came in and you know, the trees talk to him. He talks to the trees. The trees, he dies here. The tree absorbs him. And hey, we know all about this empire now.
Right.
Yeah. That is interesting. Yes.
Yeah. Say there was a scouting expedition with the idea of possibly bringing in, annexing that area or whatever. And so they actually.
So do we want to not call them deserters then, or do we want to call them Claudian Expedition?
Let's say it's a Claudian Expedition. Okay. I like this better because
they know more.
The trees know more. Because they actually absorb the knowledge of one of the officers.
All right. Some of them, I'm going to just put a Claudian Expedition arrives, some absorbed, many kicked out.
Some forgotten, some changed.
Yeah, I'm including those in the absorbed.
Okay.
I'll say that includes forgotten or some people changed, many kicked out. Who knows? Were the ones that were kicked out, how were they changed? Who knows? Maybe they bought crazy fey magic to the Claudians.
Yeah.
Maybe they gained the attention of an arch fey somewhere down the line who made friends with another Claud. Who knows?
Arch fey are stand up people, and I won't hear you even pretend to slander them.
Oh yeah, no, they're straight up. They're straight up. Okay, so here we are. We are now moving into 600 to 700. In the year 604-ish, kobolds appear in the swamps of the Forge. They call it Emphadcus. So this is going to have a whole lot less history than this crazy, which is good. But they advance very fast because they're crazy smart.
And they live very short lives, so, you know.
Yeah. Gotta advance. Three sub-races of these. Okay, so the serpent folk evolve, and the Isog also evolve. This is where the sub-races kind of come into play. The general raises an army in Pugnus Marum, which I spelled differently, I don't know why. And that's really all I have for that. That was a lot of really internal stuff was happening there. I don't know if anything, I mean... I feel like that could, I don't know, is there anybody feelings about this period of time? Is this, okay, so we're going to move on. 700 to 710, here we go. Now we're getting nitty gritty. Bard colleges, the bards are formed, the sea elf bards, fortification of Glassbale, the Council of Elders is installed in Malshar. From 711 to 720, we have the Dragonborn rebels. We have the Shore Druids. This is when the Ice Warlock Coleus arrives in the Spine Mountains with this Ice Dragon Hemlock, and eventually we get giants. This is when the army of the Garlet Warrior is founded. Malshar creates a navy. The Iron Claw advance east and form a city called Clawhold, which we'll probably never see. The first Gaian Legion is formed. So a lot of armies are being built. So in this period, a lot of people are sensing upcoming conflicts, but nothing has started yet. That is definitely in the air. Just to keep us in view, the gloaming happens 7:30 to 7:40. So whatever impetus that, and we've talked a little bit about what that may be, that causes them to create that thing, will happen with, you know, should happen around this time period or within the next year. So
I think it happens probably either 700 to 710 or 711 to 720.
Okay. All right.
It's probably the first of these because there is that sense of tension in the air. I think it's the first of that, one of those uprisings.
Okay, well, let's park one of those weird things here. Okay, let's remind ourselves, what was the thing we were talking about a little while ago?
If I remember what Rick was talking about, it's the Pooka are learning magic, and so some of them get corrupted by the power or the idea of power,
right?
And want to then they become a threat to the Wenya or the force as a whole, because it's like, oh, I can use magic now, and if I can combine my magic with the forest magic or whatever, I can become even more powerful. And so it becomes like a sinister, corrupted idea that is now was able to sneak in through, you know, something I was going to say mundane, but it's magic, so it's not mundane. But you know what I mean? It sneaks in as something that's not an overt threat because it's there. And then that starts a thing of, oh, we have to be careful because we guard against outside threats. But if something internally turns, it's a problem. And that's like that's an inciting, like, oh, we have to be more vigilant. And then something later starts to use this very occasional thing that happens, like somebody, one of the Pooka goes nuts and says, yeah, I'm gonna be in charge now or whatever, and they stomp them out. But something begins to like either encourage that or use those things and put a methodology behind it, so it's no longer a random event. It's an actual like kind of outside force trying to usurp the forest. And then that,
how about this,
the reaction to that is, let's create the gloaming because that'll protect against this.
How about this, there was a Pooka warlock of the Archfey.
Okay. And your hatred of the Archfey, but okay, yeah, that makes sense.
I think it has to have some influence from Lorianne too. Maybe Lorianne is the power behind it all.
Ooh, wow. Well, let's say, okay, so the corrupting magic that has been growing, right, in Wenya's Hollow is, sorry, I was looking up some stuff while you were talking, Scott, too, so I think
we originally had talked about, right, is that the magic itself is not corrupting, it is the idea of the power is corrupting, and Rick, you can change my mind, yeah, if there is a corrupting magic that it should be, but like I thought it was the idea of like, oh, the Pooka were not able to create to use magic originally, and they started to learn it, and mm-hmm. then they start to learn more and more, and then like some of them get to be like, maybe because they were turned from greedy humans, and so they still have this greedy power gene in them. I don't know, I don't want to be like anti-human here, but like there's something in them because they are, you know, creatures with personalities and wants and needs, and so some of them decide, maybe I should call the shots here, and it is a corruption not from the magic, but it is a power corruption. You know, like it is a personal, yeah, corruption, as opposed to like, oh, this person's tainted because they learned the forbidden arts or something. That's how I was taking it, but again, steer me off of that if that's not right. And then it just happens occasionally. There's a person who can't handle learning the magic, and they just get, you know, the worst part of their personality comes forward, or maybe learning the magic changes them and makes them greedy and mean and miserable. Or maybe they were secretly innately prone to being evil or chaotic or something. And the magic just makes it worse because now they have power that they can exert on the world. And then this becomes like a threat because it's like, oh, normally the when you weed this out through various things that we've already described that stop these influences from coming in, but this is an influence inside. So it's like, oh, we need a greater level of protection. In addition to that, the world's getting weird. And then, so that's kind of the seed to, huh, maybe we need a greater protection for our forest. And then some unknown, and whoever you talk to has a different idea, whether it was an archfey or, oh, it was this dragon or it was this evil sorcerer or whatever. This guy named Hank who lives down the street, whatever it is, starts to influence that, and then that's the thing. Like, oh, this isn't just random people who can't handle it anymore. This is an attack, and so then we're gonna create the gloaming that like kind of is this extra layer of defense that kind of knocks that out. But anyway, that's kind of how I conceived it, and like the progression of it, where it was like, oh, okay, well, we'll set the witches and the foxes and these people. We'll all keep an eye out for these people when they go wrong, so that we can deal with it. And then it becomes, there's some sinister intelligence behind it that uses the fact that occasionally the Pooka just can't handle it as a way in. And then at that point, they're like, oh, it's using our Pooka against us. We need to lock this down better. Just our hands-off method was not working. So now we have to do something a little more drastic. But steer that in whatever direction makes sense, MJ. But that's kind of how I had pieced it together in my head.
So just to let you know what I, just a little blurb I wrote down here. I wrote, this is just what I chalked down. 725, another evil magic user pops up and needs to be dealt with in Yuenya's Hollow. Is that a good placeholder for now?
That works.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I feel like...
I'm distilling Scott, yeah. Very thoughtful.
Rambling?
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
That's thoughtful rambling.
Vague sentence.
Coming to a podcast catcher near you. And I think that's it. And two, I mean, the idea is the thing that knows about the exact details of all this is the Wenya. And whether the Wenya has told anybody, like, oh, this is what happened and this happened, this is why I did the gloaming, is all like, oh, we have some basic ideas of, we could piece together, well, this happened and then the gloaming happened, so clearly something. But like, you know, we don't know what the evil was that tried to I don't like to say evil. I mean, that's very, I'm being very labelist here, but you know, the force that's trying to do stuff that Wenya doesn't like, which we'll just say evil because it's easier to say. But yeah, like, we don't know what that is. So we just need to put like kind of guideposts in the history for, oh, here are some things that probably contributed to the gloaming happening, right? Because it's a major event that's unusual for this place, that it created this extra fortification. We need to know why. And we might not know the exact details, but we know bits.
Okay, yeah, I like that. And we leave that kind of vague-ish because that could, okay. And also in that time period, a thieves guild starts in Malshar, is all it says there.
I don't think that's going to be important. You can skip over that.
A orc warlock called Dalar becomes a thing between 7:30 and 7:40. Sure, that's not going to go anywhere. The changelings form the Dan Sabah, and magical fortifications are raised around the Silver Bosch Grove, the gloaming. So, I put that, and this is the point where I stopped putting spiky ears on, never got back. That is somewhere in the middle. But that could be any time between 7:31 and 7:40. So I don't know. Do you care, MJ, of a specific year? Do you want to be earlier rather than later?
I don't have any preference.
Okay. Let's just say 7. And that is, as the crow looks at her. Alrighty, so the gloaming, I already have that, but okay, so, all right, 7:35, now, what do we want to say about the gloaming, what it is, and or how it works?
I mean, I think it's a...
Okay, cool. Mysterious force?
Yeah.
Right.
Mysterious magical fortification.
All right, so, would you say that probably, you say the confusing qualities of Wenya's Hollow are probably like amped up to 11 at that point.
Yes.
Like maybe up till then there were probably ways to navigate it.
Yeah.
But now it's like, oh no, yeah, you got to talk to them. They got to talk to the fox. You know, that's the only way you're going to find your way around here is talk to this one fox.
Yeah.
unless something else, you know, I think the idea is maybe occasionally things might point you in specific, certain directions at a time. Mm-hmm. But if you want to like, hey, I need to come here and talk to so-and-so.
Yeah.
The only way that's really going to happen is if you talk to.
Or if the hollow thinks that you're worthy, it will guide you. Yes.
Okay. So I will leave the gloaming as, hey, it's the gloaming, which makes sense because that's kind of just a mystery. All right, so we're getting closer. Okay, so then the more serpent folk armies are happening. The Duergar raise an army, and let's see, 7:41 to 7:50. The glass blades are Order of Assassins, created by Dalar. The Sea Dragon raises a navy. The Red Dragon raises a bunch of dragons are raising armies. The Sea Chi becomes the Sea Chi become masters of transmutation. This is something I forgot about completely.
Yeah, me too.
That's, you know, so that's just another thing they can do. We won't leave it at that for now.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like the gloaming is probably the full isolationist period of the Wenya. So I guess we probably just need to look and see if there's a thing that happens that would make them go, we need to talk to these people now. So then it would be an event like, oh, we let so-and-so from somewhere come in to talk to us. That would be a major event. But otherwise, I feel like they're just up doing, they're transmuting and transmogrifying into things, just hanging out, being a magical forest without any input in the world. But
So it's funny that you say that, because in that time period, also when the Mycologues establish the diplomatic relationship with the Drow and Wenya's Hollow.
Right.
And the Drow make alliance a little while later. So this is when the Mycologues show up. To make diplomatic relations with the with Wenya's Hollow,
and which then seems to speak. Sorry, Pat.
Go ahead.
No, I was like, seems to speak to the Drow and the Mycologues and Wenya's Hollow sharing some kind of information or understanding. Like, oh, okay, the three of us get it, so we should all talk to each other.
Yes,
we're cool. Everyone else can just stand out there in perpetual twilight, but the rest of us, we need to talk about what's going on. So there's something important that is that these three being shared, or they all have one piece of the puzzle or something.
Yeah, because and this is
to be let in at this time is interesting.
Okay, so then we go from 750 to 760. The Great Smith is acknowledged very early on in this time. Which I didn't put a specific year on, but I'm assuming very early on. This dwarf basically shows that she is the kind of reincarnation or present incarnation of the Great Smith, who is this great hero who exists. Tell me if I'm wrong, because I know we've monkeyed this a bunch of times. It's something that the dwarves paid lip service to for years, but there was never really a like personification of that, you know, being
right.
And then like this. This one female dwarf comes forward and it's like, hey, I can do the things that of legend, you know, like, just so you know.
and the Master Forge Masters suddenly were knocked down a couple pegs down by that and not quite so happy.
Yep. But they're, you know, they got their, you know, more direct divine abilities. Sea elves become master sailors. The orcs are raising armies. This is where the giants come. And raise an army in Krigar, in the city of Sekaret. And this is when the Mycologues send diplomats to the Claudians, the Halflings, and this is also when, okay, so this is when the first real kind of war-ish thing happens. This is when the Claudians annex a breadbasket in this time period. And this is when the elves raise armies and kick them out. Between 750 and 760 is when that all goes down. I think it's just, you know, we're still dealing with the internal stuff here. I don't think there's anything people want to slam on there.
Nah.
Okay. No. 760 to 761 to 770. This is when
the Drow.
This is when the Drow make their alliance with Wenya's Hollow. And I think this is when they literally, I think this is when they tunnel into Wenya's Hollow. Like they arrive through a cave.
I have Drow expanded tunnels to the forge. They make an alliance with Wenya's Hollow. So
this is when,
same line.
Yeah. I don't know if there's anything you want to add to that or just leave it like that. All right. And then. I think that's probably the last major thing that's happened there. Are we good to kind of leave it there and leave it, everything kind of being mysterious? Because after that, there's the Forge War. And then after the Forge War, there's the Isog War.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things from the history is the Michalogs send a diplomatic attachment to the Duergar, who are killed and eaten. I don't know how they made that known somehow, that they ate the Michalogs. And then a whole lot of other stuff happens that we're not going to talk about. And we are where we are. So, all right. Are we all good with that? Is there anything else we want to add? Any notes we want to make? Or are we dumping this all on my lap? Which is fine, by the way. I have ideas. All right. Well, as far as between,
Anything else. So okay. I'm good. I think we've got like what it's gonna kind of be like when we get there. You know, we've thrown enough, I think, obstacles in our way for visiting, and. It's not a place that has, like, if there are weird internal politics, like, it seems like everybody with the Wenya is kind of on the same page. So there's right. not a lot to get into, like, factions or anything there. So it's just how they react to the outside world. And for the most part, how they react to the outside world is, you guys stay over there. Yeah. Stay out. And I think at that point, there's not that much to talk about other than how weird it is when you get inside, which I think we kind of covered in the first part, right? So, like, yeah. you know. Getting more weird stuff is probably the way to go, but I don't know that we can top flying sleep poison rabbits. So
you might want to
quit while we're ahead.
Alrighty, I'm happy with that. Yeah, sorry, MJ. Yes,
the Drow is probably really the only outside force that knows anything of substance about this.
Well, I am going to throw one other thing in that I was going to mention and forgot, is that between the years 790 and 800, a Drow subrace,
yes.
the Fae Touch,
yep.
become a thing. So yeah. I'm guessing those two things have something to do with each other.
Yes, they do.
And the Fae Touch Drow, is it safe to say that they could dwell within Wenya's Hollow?
For sure.
As long as they're good little Drow,
yep.
Or at least, you know, neutral little Drow, as we all know. They're not whole cloth evil.
No.
There can be evil Drow. There can be evil anything, but
sure.
They're not as they are characterized in many. Okay, so thank you for anyone who has listened to this. This will likely I probably will put this in two parts because there's enough in here to put into two parts.
Yeah.
And I'll throw in little blurbs for myself here and there just to make it make sense. And I'm not going to edit a ton of stuff out of this, except for things we didn't want people to hear. So there are some stuff in here that we talked about that we decided to withhold from the audience for the sake of the story not being blown for you. Major spoilers for future stuff that could possibly happen. I hope you guys had fun doing this.
It was interesting.
It got my brain flowing. And this is how, as a DM, I get my idea. It's nice that we finally have some evidence of us actually doing the thing that we say we do.
Yeah.
And thank you all for enduring this, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Cheers, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye. You can follow Architects of Entropy on Facebook. You can also email us at entropypod@gmail.com. That's entropypod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.